Well, for active people, injuries are pretty much a fact of life. At some point or another, you're going to have an injury. And luckily, they're not always serious, might be more of an annoyance than anything else. But when it's more serious, your recovery can really be affected, for better or for worse, by whether you continue the right kinds of activity and at the right levels of intensity. Larry Mueller here. Really great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to get some great information and advice about injury and activity from a couple of guests who know a whole lot. Lori Tyne Brody, one of them, is a physical therapist. She is an athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, as always, great to have you back.
It is good to be here on such a beautiful day.
And great to have Bill Boisenault with us as well, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, great to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here. And summer has arrived.
Summer
finally
has arrived.
Finally.
Yeah. I have not had an injury yet.
Well, there you go. You just jinxed yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did. I fell when I was, of course, gardening. And I stepped into a hole and fell backwards, and my back hit the water spigot. So, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And I did not cut back on my activities. And so it's been a while now. I'm still feeling it because I haven't taken my own advice. So hopefully that's my injury for the year and I'm done.
How do you know? When it's time to curtail exercises because of an injury, what are the tells?
It's difficult to say, especially with active people because they don't want to stop. So, you know, what you typically start with, you know, if it's a significant injury, obviously you have to stop, rest, ice, things like that, seek medical attention if it doesn't recover. For many people, simply working their way slowly back into their activity is doable and they will recover from that. For other people, particularly people who have a pre-existing pathology. So, for example, if you have a history of, degenerative disc disease in your back and you do like I do, you fall and you hit your, you know, back on the spigot, that can sometimes set off a whole cascade of events that stirs up your pre-existing pathology. And then you often need medical help to kind of dig your way out of that. For otherwise healthy people, if they sustain an injury, sometimes with just stretching the area, icing, and gradually working their way back into activity, they can get back into what they're doing. But it's those people who have some pre-existing pathology where the injury kind of stirs that up again. It makes it a little harder to recover.
And, you know, in Lori's case with a back injury, it is a fine line between kind of rest and allowing recovery to happen. But too much rest is not a good thing. For most people with low back pain, you know, if you think of bed rest more than 24 to 48 hours, you start losing strength and reflexes and timing of muscles contracting. And, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, with an acute back injury, you would be in a hospital for 10 to 14 days lying in bed in some sort of traction.
Oh, my goodness.
That was part of the standard of care. And now all the guidelines that are out there for acute back pain, bed rest no more than 24 to 48 hours. And once people start resuming activity, I mean, there's a few parameters that you can use. I mean, the types of pain that we've described over the years that people should not try to walk through, exercise through, is pain that's sharp, shooting, pinching, stabbing. You do activity, there's more swelling, you know, in your knee or your ankle. Your body's telling you it's too much. So there are some signs that, you know, and that people can watch for.
And to kind of flip it around a little bit, are there some injuries where we should definitely keep our activity level up as we recover? Is there anything like that?
Well,
you're looking quizzically.
Yeah, I know. So, I think with all injuries, you should continue to be active right up to that point where you challenge that injury.
Okay.
So I think sort of across the board, no matter what it is, you want to kind of go up to the edge of the envelope. And when you feel like you're kind of pushing, that's when you back off. And so I think it's more that you should stay as active as you possibly can. If you have an injury, a lot of times what we do as physical therapists is help people find ways to work around the injury so that the injury can heal, but we still keep the tissues around it, the joints adjacent to it, strong and mobile and flexible, so that when that injured part is ready to return to more activity, that we don't have to rehabilitate the other areas because they've become deconditioned.
Mm. And, you know, Lori's accident, you can't predict those, and those things are going to happen. But, you know, we see lots of examples of people's exercise program is causing the injury. And, you know, we've used the term a number of times, dosing the exercise, dosing your exercise program, like dosing a medication. You know, we don't just tell people, go take a medication, and don't give any guidelines of how often and how many pills to take. And we used to prescribe exercise very generically. And mm-hmm. I think with more science that has come out, it's clear that you need to dose activity to prevent injury, to prevent exacerbation of pre-existing conditions, so you get the benefits from the exercise without any of the potential negative impacts.
And just as an aside to this, what are the recommended levels of exercise? Now, I do a 5K jog in the morning, and I do walk a couple miles during the course of the day back and forth from one office mm-hmm. to the other. So I'm at about 5 miles in, then I'll play some golf tonight. There's another 4 miles or so.
Yeah, that's great. The one thing I would say about your activity is it's all similar.
Yes.
You're walking, jogging. So with your golfing, you've got some, you know, some trunk rotation and things like that. But what we really look for is a variety of things. American College of Sports Medicine has said 4 to 5 times a week, minimum of 30 minutes. And if you go to the website for the American College of Sports Medicine, they break it down specifically. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's like, 20 to 30 minutes of moderate activity, or 10 to 15 minutes of moderate activity and 10 minutes of intense activity, and or stretching and balance exercises. So mm-hmm. they've started to create, rather than just the standard, you need to do, 20 to 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise 4 to 5 times a week. They've started breaking it out in a little bit more of a menu type option where you can build in some of that high intensity training that's popular now, combined with the longer duration, lower intensity, and including weight training and including balance training.
Okay. We have callers online. By the way, you can join in with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question or a comment there. Let's turn to Marty in Douglas County first here. Marty, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Say, I've had an issue for about a year with my right adductor, one of the muscles in the adductor, spasms or seizes up occasionally. Seems to happen more often if I sit for long periods of time, which I'm not much of a long-time sitter, but occasionally that will happen. It will do this maybe once a day. I have had lots of people put their 2 cents in, a PT, chiropractor, massage therapist. I'm just wondering what you guys think might be causing it or could relieve it. It seems to start at the very top of the muscle and work its way down, not quite to the knee.
So,
Bill, go ahead.
Was there an injury a year ago or a new activity that you felt like you pulled a muscle or tweaked your hip?
The only thing that changed was I applied for Social Security last year. In other words, I got a little older.
It happens to us all.
Nothing. Yeah. I cannot think of a single thing, no.
Okay. And do you ever... So you get it if you sit too long. Is it better when you're walking and stretching up on your feet?
I think so, yeah. If when I get up from lunch, occasionally it will happen. I've started to pay more attention to how I sit. I've been doing yoga for a lot of years and discovered I'm sitting ahead of my sitting bones instead of like on my sitting bones. So I'm trying to pay attention to that. And when I do that, it feels tight in that whole sort of psoas-y adductor upper quad area.
Okay. All right. And do you have any symptoms below your knee at all?
No.
Okay. No numbness, tingling, anything like that?
Well, just the past couple of days between my big and second toe, there's been a little bit of tingling, but I've also started doing some, do you know, Yamuna ball activity?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've started doing some of those exercises, and this started right after that, so I'm kind of putting those two together.
Okay. All right. You're doing great here. There's a couple more questions. So the treatment you have had, has it all been directed to your hip and adductor region?
I would say yes.
Okay. All right. Certainly, I mean, muscle spasm happen. Usually you can point to something, you know, that there's an injury or an incident or, you know, a change in activity level. And typically, if it's a primary muscle problem, it gets worse when the muscle is active, which means when you're walking or climbing stairs, not when you're sitting. And so I just wonder if the muscle spasm is the secondary issue, and either it's an underlying issue at the hip joint, maybe something wrong with your hip joint or your lumbar spine, that are impacting nerves that connect to your hip adductor musculature. The recent pins and needles that you've had, again, you started a new activity, so it may or may not be related at all, but that also fits, that area of skin fits a nerve that comes out of the lumbar spine. And so I just wonder if, again, it sounds to me this is not a primary muscle problem, or you should have been better by now with the care you've had. And so if nobody has taken a really good look at the hip joint flexibility, mobility, your pelvis and lumbar spine, that may be the underlying cause that's not allowing this to resolve. And sitting posture, it impacts the pelvis and the lumbar spine significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, low back. I mean, the things that I see most often in terms of lower extremity pain with sitting are lumbar spine related, just because of the constant compression you have on your discs. Because typically when you're sitting, you're not moving around a lot. So you have this constant pressure and load on your discs, and you get what's called creep. And you get some pressure of the disc material on those nerve roots. And so after sitting for a long period of time, you can start to get those nerve symptoms. So, again, I would agree with Bill. If you haven't had your low back looked at, that's where I'd go next.
Okay. There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Mari. Carol in Madison, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question. I had a fantastic full-body massage that was given to me as a gift, and it was really great. But the next day, I had begun to experience pain behind my knee, and it was a very strange pain because it migrated. It would be on the outside of my upper calf, the inside of my upper calf, the right side of my lower thigh, the left side. It just kind of migrated around, and it's been going on since the massage, which was 2 weeks ago. It's been suggested to me that it might be a Baker's cyst that was perhaps ruptured during the massage, and I don't know if this could be the case or not, but I also don't know what to do for this, if I should go back for more massage, if I should do stretching, if I should do exercise, if I should do heat or cold. Right now, as of today, it just seems a little bit tight and sore. I think it might be getting better. So that's my question.
So are you able to bend your knee all the way and straighten it all the way?
I can bend and straighten all the way. Sometimes, a couple of times, it's just been so incredibly painful I couldn't walk on it.
Ooh.
But after... It's just gotten really incredibly painful after, you know, if I did walk or, but then it'll get better. And then I've been trying to do like yoga stretches, just to stretch it out. I can't, put my knee behind me and pull my toe up, you know, how you do. And it hurts quite a bit.
You mean to bend your knee fully? Is that what you mean?
I can bend my knee fully. I do have arthritis in my knees, but this is my good knee that we're talking about. Yeah. My other knee is my bad knee, but it's a really odd injury.
So when you say you can't pull your toes up behind you,
yeah, it hurt. That's, you know, that's, you do that stretch.
You mean curl your toes?
Oh, you mean
yeah, just pull, yeah.
A calf.
You know, when you pull your a calf stretch.
A calf stretch.
So it's just. Yeah, I'm trying to. I've been trying to just do, you know, yoga type stretches to loosen up the muscle, but I'm just concerned about if there was a cyst or something that might have burst. Do I have to? Do I have to worry about what have happened back there, or should I just kind of let this go?
Well, typically, a Baker cyst. I mean, they don't usually burst. Usually, a Baker cyst is a kind of a weak spot in the joint capsule. And when your knee swells up from overactivity or something, then you'll get this a swelling behind your knee, and it usually limits your ability to fully straighten your knee and to fully bend your knee. And it sounds like you have full motion. So I don't know if there was something about the way you were positioned on the table that put your knee at stress. But the fact that you're having so much pain and it's still bothering you 2 weeks later, I'd probably go in and have it looked at. It sounds like you're doing the right things, trying to stretch it, ice it, try to resume your normal activities. Those are all things that we would want you to do at this point and would hope that you are getting better. Sometimes making an appointment to see, for example, your primary care physician is the final thing that does cure the problem. So, you know, at this point, I'd make an appointment to go in and see somebody because it is a complex enough question to have it looked at. And in the meantime, I would continue doing the things that you're doing, but you don't want to let it go on too much longer.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Carol, for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today. On-air producer Jason Butler. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're going to talk to one woman who's involved in science and has been for her natural life, Lori Tyne Brody.
Yes.
Excellent.
And Bill Boisenault, who's a guy, but also involved in science.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's kind of a nice mix of art and science.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
what makes the field fun.
Yep.
I would agree. Dan in Milwaukee has a question for you two. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's
guy,
on your
but
mind?
I'm also in science.
Okay,
right, good.
Perfect.
So I've been a part-time runner since high school about 20 years ago. And the reason I'm part-time is I've gradually built up knee injuries and hips and lots of plantar fasciitis hits me. And then I just give up. So
okay.
I've switched the last couple of years to a front foot stride. And you build up your calf muscles, and it's a slow, painful process. But just in the last couple of weeks, I read something about, have you heard of chi running?
Yes.
It's basically quicken your pace and push backwards instead of, but all my pains have just disappeared, and it seems really suspicious.
There's the scientist in you. Yes,
yes. Well,
yeah.
All that came out of the book Born to Run, which came out.
Sure.
Do you know how long ago that was? I don't remember when that book came out.
20 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway,
well,
it's really hit its stride. Oh, I'm sorry, I just couldn't resist it. In the past few years, with barefoot running and chi running and so on, and as physical therapists, we've been studying this problem, or this issue, I should say, since it became popularized, because you see people out running marathons and such barefoot. And there's no question that there is a change in the mechanics when you run barefoot or do the chi running. It's a different type of stride.
Chi running is what?
It's instead of a heel strike, which we have evolved to as people running on pavement, and what the shoe industry has created their shoes for, chi running is more of a midfoot strike.
Okay.
So you go midfoot, forefoot, heel. So you have this, mm-hmm. It's a different strike pattern. And there are people like Dan who swear by it, who change their running style, and they feel fantastic. Their injuries have gone away. You know, there are other people who switch to it who have a new set of injuries. So like all things in the world, there are different subcategories of people. One thing is we still haven't figured out who's going to do better with what style of running. But one thing we do know is that when people change to run barefoot or do this chi running, they shorten up their stride. Because if you're not landing on your heel, sort of by definition, you have to shorten up your stride to land in your midfoot. And we think that a lot of the benefits actually come from shortening up your stride. So for many people who are traditional runners, we have simply coached them to shorten up and quicken their stride, just as Dan has described. And it's been successful for them.
And it sounds like Dan has transitioned. He mentioned over at least a couple of weeks where he's transitioned from one style to another style. And again, as we talked earlier today, that can help avoid injuries or more than the typical muscle soreness when you start and try something new.
Yep. There we go. Thank you, Dan, for calling. Appreciate your calling. We lost him. We'll take some more calls. You can join in. Finally have some open lines. If you have a question, maybe you've got an injury or just a question about an exercise program or exercising with an injury, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Let's turn to Mary in Green Bay next. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for this show. It is like perfect timing with what something I'm dealing with. First of all, I'm 60 years old, and about a year and a half ago, I took a fall on my tailbone more to the left side. And, you know, for about 3 months, I pretty much took care of it by just doing yoga and ibuprofen and trying to get that down. And it really did seem to go away. But now since January, I don't know if it's been this really hard, cold winter or what, but now it's like every morning I wake up, I feel like I have a tight rubber band in my left cheek just pulling. I get out of bed, I do some yoga back stretches. I do yoga like twice a week, and I swim once a week, and I walk. I do exercise and ibuprofen, but I feel like I'm at a point. I have friends, they go see a chiropractor, a physical therapist. I just don't know really what else to do. I don't know if it's my fascia. A friend of mine who teaches Pilates said, you know, plantar fasciitis, that all muscle has fascia. So now I got the foam roller, and I'm using that to try to, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws. I really don't know the next step I really should take.
Okay. Well, Mary, I'm glad you called. Yes, you know, January was a long time ago. So you wake up with this tight rubber band. Does it stay tight all day? Does it get worse or better as the day goes on?
It gets better, but that's only if I, you know, I do a 20-minute yoga routine in the morning for back care, and it does some stretches with my thighs.
Yep.
And then I take my ibuprofen, and I have been much more religious, like another caller said, just really trying to have good posture. I'm a secretary, so I sit at my chair. I'm trying to keep my abs. Do some stuff there. I just don't know what that is inside my
cheek
there. That hurts.
It doesn't sound like it goes away during the day, though. Is that correct?
Well, by noon, I usually have to take another couple ibuprofens.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I just thinking it must be. I don't know.
All right. Do you have any symptoms below your knee?
No.
On that side. So, again, no numbness, no tingling, pins and needles, anything like that? All right. And I'm assuming the...
Probably mid-thigh. It probably stops by mid-thigh.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, falling on the tailbone, you know, our tailbone connects to our sacrum. There's a joint there. And and you can injure that joint. And that joint really gets stressed when we sit on it. You know, during bowel movements, that joint has to be able to move. The other is the sacroiliac joint. Also, when you land on your tailbone off the one side, you can injure that joint. Now, why it came back in January, I'm not sure I can explain that. But I guess what I would recommend is seeing a spine physical therapist specialist, someone who specializes in spine and manual therapy. And they can assess mobility of your tailbone and of the sacroiliac joint area. Sometimes there's some deep massage around the tailbone, if there's some scar tissue around that. That your yoga stretching, I mean, it's good, but if the scar tissue is really local, you're not going to affect change, more than temporary change within that area. So they need to assess your tailbone, its mobility, looking for scar tissue around that, and then also the rest of your pelvis and make sure things are aligned appropriately. So unless you've seen a spine specialist and a specialist in manual therapy since January, that would be my recommendation. Mm-hmm. And let them know specifically about the mornings, what you feel in the morning, and what you have to do during the day to get some sense of relief.
Yeah.
Do they have some way to actually see scar tissue at this point of the game?
I don't know if there's a great way to see it and tie it to specifically what you're describing or the symptoms that you have. I mean, there are some special tests that you can do in the clinical part of the examination that really gives you a pretty good indication. Are you dealing with scar tissue? You know, is it the fact that joint between your tailbone and the sacrum was really injured and you dislocated or subluxed that joint? The exam would help point to that. And have you had any imaging along the way, X-ray or MRI along the way?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Because that may be something after the clinical examination. Again, if there are more questions, you know, then imaging may help explain why this isn't going away for you.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right.
Good luck, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Lori from Duluth wonders, when is the time for knee replacement?
I just had this conversation with my mother last night.
Oh!
Because she wants to get her knee done. And she said, well, you know, maybe I'll do it in the fall or maybe this. And you know, my big question is always, how bad is it? Because, you know, people will feel better after a knee replacement. Generally, but they're not going to be perfect. So it depends upon how much room there is for improvement. And for the surgeons that I work with, their standard line is when the bad days are winning, that's when you have it done. When you have to stop doing the things that you love to do, when you find that you're more sedentary, when you find that you're staying home more from things that you used to go do and enjoy because your knee's bothering you or because you can't go up and down the stairs, it's affecting your quality of life significantly, that's when you have it done.
All right. Makes good sense. Christine and DePere, what is on your mind?
Oh, this is a perfect lead-in question. I'm calling for my mother. She's a 73-year-old globetrotter, she's the best role model on the planet. Anyway, over March, spring break, we were in Mexico, and she kind of took a funky step and tore her meniscus. So she did have an MRI. It revealed that she has a partial meniscus tear. She does not want to go into surgery, and she feels that it will heal itself. But if she's overly active on any given day, you know, the next day she'll be down. I've just seen she's been struggling a little bit. She's got a big trek to India, Tibet, and Nepal coming up this fall. And I'm saying to her, Mom, you should probably just go in and have it scoped. You'll be fine. She's kind of the fashion of, well, it will heal. Just let's give it time. It'll heal. And so we're trying to make that decision.
What did the surgeon say? Did she have an MRI?
She did have an MRI.
She did. Okay.
Revealed, like I said, the partial meniscus tear.
Okay.
And he said, well, if you're feeling okay, that's fine. If, you know, maybe meet with your doctor. There was no definitive choice
okay.
other than her saying, you know, I see that if she's out during the day or if we're, you know, at a festival or something, then the next day she's icing it and she's sore.
Okay. So
she feels that it's going to heal itself.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if that's the truth or not.
Okay. So that was spring break. Well, you don't know. No. But there's some information that can help you decide. First of all, it depends upon where the meniscus tear was. In the outside portion of the meniscus, there is a blood supply which can assist in healing. If it's on the interior of the meniscus, the central to middle 1 to 2 thirds. There is no blood supply and it won't heal. It also depends upon the kind of tear that it is. If it's a longitudinal tear, when your mom steps down on it, it's kind of like a cut and it pushes those torn edges together and can aid healing. If it's a tear that goes across the meniscus, then when she steps down, it spreads and it will never heal. So will it or won't it heal? Nobody knows. So that's A. Then B is, even if it doesn't heal, is it better off just leaving it alone? If it's not flipping around in her joint and causing mechanical symptoms, clicking, catching, locking, then maybe it's okay. If she's walking around and the next day she's swollen and sore and icing, then I would say that it's causing mechanical symptoms. So
it has locked up and she's dug it once or twice because it's kind of locked up on her when she wasn't expecting it.
So she probably has what's called a bucket handle tear. And what happens is, depending upon the position that she's in, that little tear will flip up into the joint and act like a doorstop. And you can tell your mother that every time that happens, it beats up her joint surfaces and accelerates her arthritis. So, you know, given the level of symptoms you're telling me, it seems as though if she wants to trek, she may need that knee scoped. That being said, you don't know what's going to happen, how her knee's going to respond to having it taken out. It may feel like, oh, thank goodness you got that annoying thing out of there. Or if she has underlying arthritis, it can accelerate it because it changed her mechanics. Sounds like your mom's probably pretty active. She's probably strong. She's probably not overweight. So those are factors in her favor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no sign of her slowing down anytime soon.
Yeah, she should maybe have a more heart-to-heart with the doctor in terms of, is this or is this not going to heal?
Yeah, and make sure the doctor understands what her activity level is and will be, especially looking ahead to the fall. That may help guide the discussion a little bit.
And the other part about the trek to Nepal is she's going to be on uneven surfaces, and uneven surfaces will be much harder on her knee than a straightforward walking. So if she's getting symptoms walking around a festival or something where she's on, you know, relatively smooth ground, if she's walking on uneven, rocky stuff, it's going to be even harder on her knee.
That's a very good point.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Yep. I think I'll take her to her next appointment.
Yeah. Go along with her, Christine. Thank you very much for calling. And Judy in Lodi, thank you for calling. Hi, thanks for being with us.
I'm your guest. I've got a situation. I'm 73. I used to be very, very active, but unfortunately the last 10 years I've developed a lot of things I didn't want and do have. I've got complete nerve damage in both legs and feet. And 2 months ago I fell on my back and right on the tailbone. Broke the bone above it, is what my orthopedic doctor said. Well, unfortunately, this past Friday, I fell on my knee and injured that somehow. And I'm ready to, I don't know, I just don't know what to do anymore.
Okay. So, Judy, have you seen anybody related to balance, or you're doing any kind of exercise rehabilitation program for balance?
Yeah, I just started seeing a neurologist, and he has been more thorough than any doctor I've seen in the last 15 years.
Okay.
And I've had in my family in the past, my father had the same thing that I've got with the nerve damage, where he was completely unable to walk. But he was a diabetic, and so far it's been proven I'm not a diabetic. I'm losing my eyesight with glaucoma, macular degeneration, and now I've got all these problems that have come up.
Oh, boy.
And okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I was a bouncing ball. Well, now I'm like a rock. I can't bounce anymore.
Yeah,
I think we can relate to that as well. You know, the key is, it sounds like you have reasons why you're at high risk for falls. And it sounds like you found a good person, a neurologist, to work with, but there should be a comprehensive balance program for you. Somebody comes to your home, looks at how your house is laid out to minimize whatever risk they can environmentally to decrease falls. Looking at your footwear, could it be that orthotics or prosthetic may help you related to your balance? So you need a well-rounded program to address all those things to minimize the risk of falling again and having more musculoskeletal types of injuries. So when do you go back and see the neurologist again?
Yeah, I go back. The only trouble is they couldn't get me in until July 28th. Okay. But in the meantime, I'm suffering, and I've got meds I have to take because I've got a permanent injury in my right scapula.
Yeah.
And then with the nerve pain and stuff, it's just been unbelievable.
Okay.
The knee I'm more concerned about now. I iced it over the weekend. It helped. But the minute I would get up and turn it just a fraction the wrong way, and the pain was unbelievable.
Well, Judy, in the meantime, two things. One, you should call the neurologist's office, and if you're not on a cancellation list, you should ask them to place you on a cancellation list in case a spot opens up that you can get in there earlier. And then in the meantime, maybe seeing your primary care physician to look at your knee and maybe look at the medications that you're on. Just make sure that you haven't suffered a fracture at the knee or something other structural at your knee.
Yeah, agree. I think you need to get in and have that looked at first and not wait until the neurologist appointment.
Yeah, and good luck to you. And thank you very much for calling, Judy. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'm Larry Mealer. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, my guests today, on-air producer Jason Butler, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we take a look at exercising with an injury or how to deal with your specific injury with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Bill's a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a senior physical therapist. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer for UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Always great to have them along. They come by once a month to talk with us. And Christopher and Madison, you have the next opportunity to speak with them. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, great. I am a 65-year-old male, and I have bone on bone in my left hip joint. So it's time for me to have hip replacement. And when I start studying this on the internet, I see that there's two types of operations, an anterior or a posterior procedure for getting at that hip joint. And do you, as physical therapists, have anything to say about which is the more effective and quickly healed type of operation to recover from?
Not particularly. We see more posterior approaches than anything that's traditionally what's been done. And typically people do pretty darn well after a hip replacement. The recovery after a hip replacement for the vast majority of people is faster and easier than that of a knee replacement. For your knee, sometimes it's a little harder getting your motion back. Typically, a surgeon will have a preferred method or may have reason to go anterior instead of posterior, and sometimes it depends upon the structures or tissues that they have to go through or some underlying other pathology that the individual has that precludes them from placing them in a certain position. But in general, if I was going to have it done, I would go with my surgeon's preferred method because he or she will be better skilled at their preferred method. From a healing point of view, I haven't seen any differences anterior versus posterior. Everyone does pretty well following this procedure.
Mm. Okay.
Does that get at your question? So, again, I guess my advice would be, number one, go with what your surgeon prefers.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, Christopher. Thank you for calling. Call back. Let us know how it goes.
Sure.
Yeah, love to hear that. George in Madeline Island, thank you for calling. Hi.
I feel like a chicken after listening to all these problems. I'm 84. I play tennis about three times a week. I got two issues, two problems. I've got a stiff neck on the right-hand side from my ear down to my shoulder. Every time I wake up in the morning, I have a bedboard and a firm mattress. That's one issue, the stiff neck. Two, my balance is going. What exercise can I do to somehow hold on to the footwork when I play?
Okay. All right, George, let's start with your neck first. How long have you been waking up with the stiffness and soreness? In weeks, months?
No. When we moved from a warm climate back here, so it's been about a month.
About a month, okay.
Yeah.
And no injury or accident?
No injury, no accident.
Good. And during the move, not lots of lifting?
No, I don't lift things.
Okay, good. And you're sleeping on the same mattress and using the same pillows you always have?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, firm mattress can be helpful for lots of people. In terms of neck stiffness, it's more related to what position you sleep in or wake up in and your pillow. What position do you typically wake up in when your neck is stiff and sore? Do you know stomach, one side, on your back?
Yeah, on my right side, because it relieves the pain a little bit when I'm sleeping to be on my right side.
Okay.
It's the right neck. It's the right side of the neck down to the shoulder.
Okay. And you use one pillow, two pillows?
One pillow, doctor.
All right. Okay. And compared to 2 weeks ago, are you getting any better at all, or
no.
Are you worse?
No, pretty much the same. It hurts.
Okay. All right.
At a 10-point scale compared to a kidney stone, it's about a 4.
Okay. All right, that puts it in perspective.
That's
bad enough, though.
Yeah.
Yes. So here's what I would try short term. First of all, I can't tell you necessarily why the stiffness is there, but at this point, it doesn't really matter as long as there's no injury. Is take a bath towel, fold it in half, and roll it up, and stick it inside your pillowcase. So kind of the bottom side of the pillowcase, not the top of the pillow, but the bottom of the pillow. And then sleep with that rolled-up towel inside the pillowcase. It's analogous to putting a back support in somebody's low back area just to keep the back in more of a neutral position.
I will do that.
Now, if you try that and you lie in a towel and it just feels too hard, it's too much pressure against your neck, then take it out, roll it up not quite so tight. So you can adjust the firmness of it.
Okay, loosen if too much pressure.
Yeah, that's right. And if you feel that, you know, after a couple of days that you're waking up and it's a 2 out of 10 instead of 4 out of 10, then that's what I would keep doing until this resolves gentle stretching of the right side of your neck.
Okay.
Now, if that doesn't help, then I would go in and see somebody. After 4 weeks, if this is just a minor muscle thing, it should be going away by now.
Uh-huh.
Then go in, and then somebody can assess your posture and maybe look at some specific exercises that can help work these kinks out.
Assess posture and specific exercises.
And I'm assuming you're not having any pain going into your arm. You just mentioned.
No.
Okay. And no numbness or tingling in your arm?
No.
Okay. All right. Balance is going. How do you know your balance is going?
Well, when I try and move my feet to go after a forehand, it's precarious.
All right.
Or a backhand. I'm feeling, uh-oh. That's a very technical term, I know. But
So your brain's telling you to do one thing, and your feet are doing something else.
And my feet are saying, no way, baby.
Yeah. And when did this start happening?
Oh, the last couple of years.
Okay. And compared to a month or two ago,
it's the
same. All right. Well, there are certainly balance exercises. The question I would have is, why is this happening? Even though it sounds like it's been slow, gradual over time, balance is tied to things happening in your legs between muscles and nerves, the reflexes, also tied with vision, and there are centers in the brain that also are important for balance. And I guess, George, as active as you are, and you don't want to fall and have a nasty orthopedic injury, I'd go in and be assessed for your balance.
Balance assessment, and what type of specialist should I see that?
I guess I would start, I'm assuming you're covered by Medicare?
Yeah.
Is that correct? So I would go to your primary care physician, and they'll do a neurological screen. They'll be able to check your medications, and then they can refer you to a rehabilitation center where there are physical therapists or some PTs that are balance experts. They've got equipment that can really break down where might the problem be occurring, and then design the program for you.
There you go. Good luck, and thank you. So much for calling, George. Appreciate your call. And you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have Mary in Madison up next. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am 65 years old. I'm active and pretty healthy, but I've been dealing with a sore shoulder since November. And I now have a diagnosis of adhesive capsulitis. I've gotten good physical therapy, like starting in January, and let's see, in February I had a cortisone shot, and between the therapy and the cortisone shot, in the next couple months I made a lot of progress and got some pretty good range of motion, but since in about the last 5 weeks or so, it's been kind of going in the other direction so that I'm getting stiffer, and when I went to see the doctor a couple of weeks ago, he said, okay, joint capsule is very tight. It's okay to do another steroid shot. And I set up the appointment. Even though I didn't want to do a steroid shot, I thought, well, I'll just be on this merry-go-round with shots getting better, and then it isn't going to get better. I think... When it started getting worse again was when the physical therapy got spaced out to 2 weeks, and then I'm doing some light strength training, and that seemed to not work the way it was supposed to work in terms of just getting me totally better. So I'm feeling like, okay, I made an appointment with an acupuncturist, but, you know, that's different. That's slower. That's subtle. It's not like a cortisone shot. I don't know. What do you think about?
Well, I think some of it depends upon how quickly you wish to get better. So the natural history of adhesive capsulitis is 18 to 24 months. So, you know, when you had the cortisone shot and the intense therapy, it accelerated things for you. The adhesive capsulitis goes in phases. You have a freezing phase, and then you have a thawing phase, which tends to last quite a while. It's hard to know, you know, if you're sort of moving the other direction had to do with the change in therapy, whether changing up your therapy would make a difference again. It sounds like you feel like what happened with your therapy was not helpful at that point.
Well, I have a really good therapist. It's mm-hmm. just that I was trying to figure out why it changed, and that was my best guess.
Yeah. So it could be, it should be thawing. It should be gradually improving. You know, theoretically, you shouldn't be going backwards, but you'll go forward at different rates. So after the cortisone shot and intense therapy, you'll probably accelerate a bit, and then it'll plateau a bit, and then you'll have a phase where you speed up again and so on. And some of it has to do with intervention, and some of it is just the natural course of the disease. So, you know, acupuncture is fine, but you are correct. It will probably be the slow boat. So if you're adverse to the cortisone, then you can continue on the slow boat and know that eventually, if you look at the epidemiology, you will get better. It'll take a little bit longer. If you'd like to accelerate it because you feel like it allows you to do more things that you want to do, then getting another shot would be helpful. You know, it's been, you know, 3 or 4 months, and to have, you know, a couple shots spaced over several months has not shown to be negative, particularly in this kind of a case.
Okay. Well, that's what I needed to know, because my first doctor, before getting the first shot, he said it can damage your tendon. You know, he's letting me know of the something that's not so likely but could happen.
Right. That's their job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the second doctor was kind of like rushing through, like, no, just do it. And then I sort of put on the brakes because that doesn't work so well for me, because I feel like I'm being rushed through things.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And probably the assumption was because you had it before and it was successful that that you understood all those things and that, you know, that was potentially what you were coming in to ask about. So that may be why it felt rushed. So, you know, ultimately it's your decision. It's your shoulder. You can, the other alternative would be to increase the intensity of your therapy again short term and see if that gets you back where you want to be in the absence of the steroid.
And thank you very much for calling, Mary. Caller John has peripheral neuropathy. What are the pros and cons of anodyne therapy? I'm not sure what anodyne therapy is, but.
Nor I.
Ah.
Peripheral neuropathy is a very difficult problem to treat. We see a number of people with this, and it's very painful.
Yeah, people with diabetes, and there's different causes of neuropathy, and it is painful and burning, and people get hypersensitive. But I'm not familiar with that therapy.
What therapies are commonly used?
Well, typically they're on medications like Neurontin, which is used for nerve pain. They come to therapy to maintain the strength of the muscles. It's typically in their feet and legs to maintain the strength of those muscles, to maintain the mobility of their joints, to help them with balance. We've had a number of people call with balance issues, but to help with balance because they tend to trip and fall because they can't feel their feet. So usually medications for the pain, therapy for strength, mobility, and balance, what we see.
Yeah. Wow. So that's not a fun
No, it's...
No, it can be very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, we have more callers online, and we're going to be taking a little break here to take a look at the news and weather here. Our guests today, Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of UW Hospitals and Clinic, and Lori Tyne Brody. Lori's a physical therapist. She's also an athletic trainer with the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the grad program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Please stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from or a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may be dealing with some aches and pains, and it can be hard to know what's just an annoyance that was going to go away on its own and what might need more attention. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. They're sharing what they know and their experiences with dealing with these injuries, and I certainly hope you'll join in with your own experiences, questions, and comments. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And just before our news break, we talked about John with his peripheral neuropathy and wondered about the pros and cons of anodyne therapy. And Bill, you've had a chance to read up a little bit on it.
Right. If we don't know the answer, we'll try to find it. And so doing a little Googling, the anodyne therapy system, it uses infrared light, so a form of light, to stimulate a temporary increase in local blood circulation. And from what I could glean from where I went on the internet, there's no science supporting its use for people with neuropathy. Peripheral neuropathy. Now, the studies looked at it was mainly people with diabetes that was causing the neuropathy. And I'm not sure if that's what John mentioned he had or not. But so it's infrared light to stimulate local blood flow. It's temporary, and couldn't find any science backing it up in terms of peripheral neuropathy treatment.
But, and you know, in physical therapy, light therapy has been used in different fashions over the years. And I have had patients here in Madison. There's they call it a red light therapy clinics where they offer this kind of therapy. And I've had anecdotally patients report that they feel better with it. So if you feel better with it and it makes you be more active and be able to do more around your home or in the community, then I would say by all means, go ahead and do that. There's just
pretty low risk, I would guess.
Exactly. And some of these, they call them orphan therapies because there's no money behind studying it, either by the manufacturers or whatever, they never really get studied sufficiently.
Dennis in Rhinelander has a question for you. Dennis, hi.
Well, hello.
Hello.
I'm 70 years old. I'm in great shape, but I've got a strange malady. Started about 2 months ago. It's in the dead center of my left butt cheek, and it radiates down the upper muscles in my left leg. Now, it only happens, I lay down in bed and fall asleep for about 45 minutes, and it wakes me out of a sound sleep just like a Charlie horse, and it's excruciating. I've got a large threshold for pain, but this is just terrible.
Hmm. And Dennis,
I can't imagine what it is.
Yeah, you're probably wondering, who's kicking you while you're sleeping, it sounds like. Do you ever have this at any other time except when you lie down?
No. No, I'll put ice on it, heat, and take ibuprofen, and walk around the trailer. When I'm on my feet, I'm fine.
Okay.
As soon as I lay down in bed and relax, and it's a fiery, burning pain. It's not like any kind of a muscle ache.
Okay. All right. And again, and there's no numbness or tingling down into your leg or foot?
Well, it goes down to my left knee.
Okay.
In the upper muscles, and it's that same pain that I have in my butt, I have in my leg.
Okay, got it. I apologize. Well, the sciatic nerve exits the butt cheek in that area and goes down the back of the leg.
Okay.
Now, I can't tell you why this would only happen after you're lying down for 30 to 40 minutes, as opposed to when you're standing and sitting and as active as you sound that you are. But there's a couple different causes. You know, there's something called piriformis syndrome. There's a piriformis muscle that is in very close approximation to the sciatic nerve. The irritation could actually be a little bit higher in your low lumbar area, and you're just feeling things below that area. But the fact that it's been going on for 2 months, I think it's time to go in and get it looked at.
And it only happens maybe once a week for two nights, and then it goes away. It doesn't happen again.
Hmm.
And sometimes when I lay down and I'm starting to go to sleep, I don't know if I mentally make it happen, but I'll feel that pain starting. And sure enough, and I've never hurt there, dead in the center of my left butt cheek.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you ever, do you try to change positions? What position are you sleeping in?
Well, I sleep on my right side generally, but I've tried everything.
Okay.
I did have a friend of mine who's a therapist lay me down on the floor when it happened one time and put my left leg up where my heel was almost to my forehead. And then he put pressure on my knee. And that seemed to relieve it. And he seemed to know kind of what it was. But it's a strange malady. I've had a lot of aches and pains in my life, but never one like this.
Yeah, well, nerve pain, that'll get your attention. Well, if I need to go back and see this therapist again, it sounds like what they came up with helped temporarily, but maybe a little more detailed examination. They can examine you while you're lying down in the positions you typically go to sleep in and look at the posture of your spine versus your hip. And they can also do a good neurological screen and try to get a sense of how irritated the sciatic nerve might be. And
not bothering me. Can they? Yeah, you know what I mean, but I might feel fine for a whole week.
Yeah. Well, it probably would make their job a little bit easier if you had some symptoms when you came in, but not always. I mean, it may be after the first visit, the therapist says, "Look, I can't see you again until you're hurting," and then you call me, and we'll get you in.
Have you ever tried doing that stretch on your own, just on a regular basis?
I stretch every day. I had a lot of lower lumbar problems for many, many years, and I went to Spine and Sport here in Rhinelander, and they put me on a exercise regimen and stretching, and that has, knock on wood, not bothered me for years.
Okay. Well, Dennis, I'm familiar with that group. It'd be a good group to reconnect with and just let them know what helped temporarily and see what else they can incorporate into your program for you.
Yeah, there might be some other things they could do.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Sounds like you're happy where you know that group.
I do. It's a good quality group. Yep,
great. Melanie in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I am 52 years old. I'm very active, work out 4 to 5 times a week doing different things, aerobics, weights. I like to cycle here in the summertime. And I recently, in the last month, have taken up running. just as an alternative way to get some aerobics in. And I'm using the Couch to 5K app, which, you know, kind of has you walk in and run intermittently. And it's been going great, but over the last week or two, I've developed, like, hip pain in my upper posterior right hip. It doesn't radiate. It kind of just stays in the area. It'll start to act up maybe towards the end of the run. It'll be there for a while. I'll take ibuprofen, rest it. It goes away in between the runs, and I run every other day, every second day or third day. And yesterday I was out, and I was running, and I got kind of a pulling sensation in my right hip, on the lateral hip this time. And I was able to finish my run, but it really hurt a lot. So I put ice on it, and I'm resting, and I'm doing ibuprofen. Today I feel great. I went for a 10-mile bike ride. I did take some ibuprofen this morning, but I don't know if it's that piriformis muscle you just mentioned, or is it bursitis, or what do you think it is, and what could I do to prevent it?
So when it starts, you said it's toward the end of your run. Do you know when you feel it in the gait cycle? Is it when you're weight-bearing on that leg? Is it when it's swinging forward? Do you have any idea?
Gosh, I don't know. I want to say maybe weight-bearing.
Okay.
Like yesterday when I felt the pulling sensation, I believe I was putting my foot down, and I'm trying to do kind of the midfoot, you know, mm-hmm. strike instead of the heel strike. And it just yesterday, it was quite a pulling sensation that was kind of new, and it was kind of more towards the side than the back. I was able to finish the run. I could feel it more. I just kind of slowed down a little bit. And I do try to stay off the road. I do go on the side of the, on the shoulder. I'm out in the country. I do try to stay on the softer side of the road. But,
okay.
Yeah, today it's fine, but yeah, it was kind of killing me for a while yesterday. And I've been trying to do the piriformis stretches thinking that's what it was, but now I don't know if it's that
okay.
or bursitis or what.
And are you running facing traffic?
I'm going with traffic.
You're going with traffic, so your right yeah. leg is the downhill leg.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the issues, and I used to live in the country and
yeah.
ran on the roads, one of the issues is they have a pretty significant grade in order for water and snow to go off. So if you're always running and that's your long leg, it's mm-hmm. throwing off your gait.
That's what I wondered.
Yeah,
because I try to stay away from that as much as I can, but you know, it can only go so far.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you've gone about the program the right way with mm-hmm. the Couch to 5K. Mm-hmm. If I were you, I would, I'd stretch it, I'd ice it, and then I would try running someplace where you can be on a level surface to see if that's the issue.
Okay.
Before you get too involved in the medical system and get mm-hmm. all kinds of this, that, and the other thing. Because you're able to bike and do all those other things without symptoms, there's something about the weight bearing that's the issue.
Yeah.
And, the most likely candidate is the slope, creating an apparent leg length difference for you. So
okay.
I would try for a couple days, a week, running on a level surface in town. Or someplace where it's level and see if you get the same symptoms. And if you are, then you need to go in and have someone look at it and look for those asymmetries, leg length differences,
sure.
differences in hip rotations or whatever, and have it looked at. But start with the easy solution and see if it has to do
yep.
with the slope.
There you go.
Okay. That okay. sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Karen in Stoughton. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I'm having a problem with my right leg, kind of a pain in the back, the groin, mostly the groin. And I've gone to a chiropractor, and usually the back is fixed immediately with that. This time it's not. I had an x-ray of my hip. It's fine. And she thought maybe I should see a PT person, and I'm not quite sure why or what would be done. I had foot surgery last October. And I know that I was walking kind of weird for quite a few months after that. No, I don't know if that did it. I don't know.
Well, that can do it. Any other reason you can think of as to why this pain, this groin pain in particular, would have started?
No, I've never had it before.
Okay. And do you have some pain all the time, or does it come and go?
It kind of comes and go. It goes like, if I go to cross my legs, I'll feel it. Or sometimes I've twisted my leg a funny way or something, and a pain will really shoot through it, and
okay.
then it's gone.
Okay. All right. And walking during the day, the more time you spend on your feet, does it get worse? Does it get better?
No, it's about the same. I play tennis and I walk, and it doesn't, I mean, like tennis with all the movement laterally and everything, I never have it with that.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like something more structural with your hip, and the x-ray can rule out osteoarthritis to a degree, but it gives no information about the labrum. There's a cartilaginous ring around the hip socket that deepens the socket, and sometimes you can get some degenerative changes there that can give symptoms like you described, certain leg positions or X amount of activity can really flare this up. How long has this been going on again?
Oh, I would say I started having more back problems in April, but the groin thing, I would say it's been, I would say close to 2 months.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think what the therapist would do is, and they would also take a look at your foot. I mean, from your foot on up, it could be that the issue with your foot set you up to have this.
It's the other foot. It's the foot I had this surgery on.
Okay, all right. But again, it throws off how you walk and how you stand. So that would still be relevant for them to know. But they'll examine your hip in terms of flexibility, strength. There are some special tests that give you information about the hip structure, including the labrum. And that may help some guidance, either with specific exercises or possibly seeing an orthopedist to have a more detailed assessment of the hip joint itself. And a therapist can also take a look at your back at the same time and see if there's any connection between the two, although what you're describing sounds like that's probably not the major issue.
Well, and it's also the chiropractor I go to, she's always worried about my knee. My knee never goes down flat. I had surgery probably 8-9 years ago, and it doesn't go down laying on the table with face down. I can't put it down, but I never have been able to.
Yeah.
So that really isn't anything new.
Yeah. Well, again, it just sets up walking and standing and any higher level activity. It does impact the hip joint. So that's what the physical therapist would look at. They would look at your walking pattern. They'd look at your posture and then your mobility and your strength, and then be able to do special tests to help identify some tissues that may be causing your problem.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Karen. Appreciate it very much. Betsy in Cloquet, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question for you. I am having knee replacement surgery in a couple of weeks, and I'm wondering what exercises I can do before the surgery to strengthen my recovery.
Have you met with a physical therapist that you'll be seeing afterwards?
Not.
You have not?
No.
Well, there's a couple options. One, you could call your physician who's doing the knee replacement and ask if they have anything, any written handouts or booklets that they do, or if you could meet with a physical therapist. We often find that, at least here in Madison, that it's useful to meet with a physical therapist once prior to your surgery to learn what your home exercise program is going to be and know what to expect. The rehabilitation afterwards is pretty lengthy and complicated, and it's really good for patients to know what to expect afterwards. So getting instructed in the post-op exercises beforehand and practicing those so that when you come out of surgery and you're having a lot of pain and you're a little bit groggy, somewhere in your brain you remember what your exercises are. So you could start with the surgeon to see if they have anything, or if they have a physical therapist that they recommend, or if you know who you're going to see, you could ask them. Typically, we work on things to restore your range of motion. Most notably, we want your knee to go all the way straight. We want it to go all the way bent. So working on bending and straightening your knee and doing some stretching, as well as the muscle tightening exercises where you tighten the muscle, your thigh muscle on top of your thigh, your quadriceps. So practicing tightening that, and then in kind of a reclined or semi-reclined position, tightening that muscle and lifting your leg up forward to the side and backwards. It's a pretty useful exercise. Mm-hmm. Some toe raises.
Great. Those are great ideas, and I will get on it right away.
All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling.
You betcha. Good luck with that.
Yeah. I got an email from Wayne to the fellow who called in with a balance problem. I suggest he ask his doctor to arrange an ultrasound of his carotid arteries. I had the same problem, and they discovered a 95% blockage on the right side, setting me up for a stroke. After surgery, the balance problem disappeared.
Yeah, decreased blood flow up inside the head can be a major issue. There can be balance issues for so many reasons, and that's why it didn't sound like he was worsening quickly when George called in. But the fact's been going on for a couple of years. I mean, it can be medications, it can be altered blood flow, it can be degenerative changes in the neck, the cervical spine that puts pressure on some of the nerves in the spinal cord. And that's why George really hasn't had that looked at to kind of get a good global look at what might be causing it.
Right. And that's why often with those problems, you recommend that they start with a primary care physician rather than going directly to therapy.
Yeah.
We had an email from Dia in Burlington who had an ugly ganglion cyst removed from the middle finger. I've been occasionally experiencing sharp pains at the joint followed by stiffness. I'm very active, worried that it's growing back. What can I do to prevent it from coming back? I'm 51, don't have any other arthritis problems.
Well, if she didn't go to therapy or see a hand therapist afterwards, that might be the place to start, because they can talk about activities, maybe a little pressure sleeve to keep some pressure on that joint to prevent it from coming back. Gloves. There's a number of different things. She might need some ergonomic tools if she's involved in gardening or other work-related activities that use a lot of hand movements or gripping. Then getting some modified ergonomic tools to decrease the stress on that joint would be useful. So, you know, a little bit like the balance problems, there's a number of things that can cause that ganglion. There can be a number of problems afterwards. And some of it, some of the intervention would be directed at how she usually spends her time, what kind of activities.
Vicki in Mequon, do you have a quick question?
Hi, thank you. I have never had a knee problems before. I've been doing yoga for about 6 years. I walk and I, you know, go to the Y. And I had this, it's an evolving knee problem. It started with one day I went to go sit in the lotus position at yoga and I couldn't put my knee down. And went to just cross my legs while sitting and can't bring my knee down, you know, to a right angle. And I kind of just let it go for about a month. And then I did see a therapist and she thought possibly it was hip related. So we worked on T-bands and piriformis. And now it's just kind of evolved into, you know, I still don't have that range of mobility, but pain on the right side of my knee, on the top side, I feel instability when walking up and down stairs. I can't relate it to anything that I've done other than I was on the elliptical at the Y and felt a little clicking sensation, and I kept going, clicking sensation in my knee, and yeah. I, you know, kept going for a few minutes.
So if you saw a therapist and they looked at your hip, you could probably go back to that person and have them look at your knee. It's certainly reasonable to think it could be a hip-related problem, but it sounds like it's settled out in your knee at this point. It could be some underlying arthritis, and at one point you got yourself in an awkward position and inflamed your knee. It could be a little meniscus tear, which is what happens with a click, and you may have either stirred up some underlying inflammation related with that, or you could have a little loose body in your knee that's causing limited motion. So again, there's a number of different reasons why you've lost that motion there. So I'd go back and have it looked at, primarily your knee.
Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much. Another great show.
Pleasure as always.
Good to be here. Lots of interesting
good
questions
calls,
and callers and information from callers. All very good.
You'll be back on July 21st. That's a Monday, too. Lori Time Brody and Bill Boisenault, Lori, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Sports Med and Spine Center. Bill, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a senior physical therapist. They will be back on July 21st, so we're really looking forward to that. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.